Hi Bharat, thank you so much for coming on Podcast Unconventional. I'm super excited to know about your journey. So my first question to you is, what's your story and how did you get to where you are today?
Hi, so my story, it's actually quite interesting. I started off with an honors degree in economics. And during that period, the transition from 12th grade into university, a friend of mine made me join Shamak Davar's dance classes. And, within the first 6 months, I sort of got selected to perform at the Commonwealth Games in Melbourne. And I think that was sort of like a turning point where I realized that I did have a keen interest in the entertainment field per se. And I became a part of Shamak's dance company. I moved to Bombay right after graduation. Though I did my master's in public relations and journalism, but my interest became more towards entertainment as well. Soon after, I started working as a Shamak celebrity manager and publicist, and I was also a part of his dance company. I was with him for about 8 years, and about three and a half years back, I decided to make a switch, though it's quite related, but I still decided to make a switch from entertainment into fashion. I worked with a couple of designers, more towards their marketing and PR side, but also to understand design aesthetic, because I had a keen interest in styling. There is a fashion mentor in Bangalore by the name of Prasad Bidappa, who's hugely famous in India, who has mentored talent like, Lara Dutta, Deepika Padukone, Anushka Sharma. So I had met him, and then I went to Bangalore for almost a month. And he sort of mentored me, and then I came into Bombay and took up styling and model training and model grooming as a full-time career, and that's what I've been doing now.
So what problems did you face when you started pursuing your passion for styling and grooming the models, and how did you overcome it?
So primarily, I think the main problem or challenges are not external, they're more internal. You know, when you're venturing into a field which is unconventional, there are certain stereotypes in the society, A, and B, there is always that risk that are you going to make it? And is your passion also going to convert into something that is going to be of commercial value to you? Because eventually, we all have to survive, and unfortunately, both the entertainment and fashion industry are centered in Mumbai, and Mumbai is an expensive city, so sustenance sort of becomes an issue. I think the one challenge that I thought I could have faced is whether I will begin to get work or no. But I think having had a background in the field, it sort of, I had networked, and being a people's person sort of helps. So, through that network, people sort of get to know that, you're venturing into something new. They were very supportive, and that sort of helped. You face a lot of on-the-job challenges initially, trying to understand the finer nuances of your profession, understanding the requirement, working with different sets of people. And the primary challenge is the instability, because you're not in terms of whether you're going to get work or not, but in terms of the people you'll work with. There are a lot of situations where, if you have a corporate job or if you have like a stable job, you understand the sort of team that you're working with, and you make sure that, you adjust yourself to their requirements and their tantrums, argues. Here, what happens is every time you style a new product, whether it's a commercial or a print campaign or a celebrity or a fashion show, you're always constantly working with different types of people and different sets of people. So, you have to constantly keep, adjusting to their ways of working and their requirements. So that sort of becomes a challenge, but that also adds to your learning curve.
So what do you want to be known for?
A good person to work with, I think that's primary. There are so many people, there are, avenues have opened so much, opportunities have opened so much, and there are so many people who will creatively and aesthetically be different from you. Better or not may vary, but will be different from you, and each one's liking towards aesthetic may vary, but you know, one thing that people always remember is a pleasant person to work with who made the entire experience fun and memorable. So I think that is the primary goal.
So what are the three things you would tell a friend or colleague about how to be successful in this field?
One, be very passionate. When you choose a profession that is unconventional, it's very important to be passionate about what you do. Otherwise, you know, if you lose that passion, you lose direction as well. Second is you have to be very self-driven. When you choose a profession that is out of the ordinary, it's very rare that, you know, you get familial or parental support, which is 100%. You know, only when you start showing results will they start believing in what you do. So a lot of motivation needs to be self-driven initially. So you need to be very self-driven and to sort of be successful in this field. And third is that you need to network very well. In this field, it's very important to, you know, there's a very thin line between socializing and networking. A lot of people mix the two and think that there's a lot of partying involved. Partying can be frivolous as well. Partying can also, you know, sort of garner that work for you. So it's very important to network with the right people who will teach you the right things and guide you in the right direction. So I think being passionate, being self-driven, and creating a network for yourself sort of will help you in this field.
So who are your current and past mentors, and what impact did they have on your life?
I think the primary mentors in your life is your family. So, you know, from my parents and my sister, they have sort of been the strongest mentors, because any profession that you take, it's your personality that sort of drives you. And I think your personality is built at home and even amongst your friends. So I think in a subconscious way, they have been my mentors. Professionally, obviously, Shamak Dabar was my first mentor in the entertainment field. And in terms of fashion, Prasad Bidappa was my first mentor. And over the years, you know, you keep learning from different people. You know, they may not be mentoring you on a one-to-one basis, but just by observing their work and what they do. You know, like more recently, I've been working with another fashion director called Lubna Adam, who's hugely popular. And I think, like, anyone who's been in the industry for so long and you work with them, there's so much to learn from them. I think mentors are people who don't consciously teach you, but just by observing them and by the sheer duration of their experience in the industry, you observe and adapt yourself to what they have learned. And I think they have been my primary mentors in this field. When I was doing PR, my senior colleague was Rajesh Mansukhani, who's been handling Shamak's PR for years at end, and he was handling international relations for him. So, you know, he's also been a very dear friend and mentor through this process.
So what's the really hard thing for new stylists to get used to in this creative field?
You know, I think it's finding themselves. What happens is styling also in a way is a developing field. Designing is developed already. So, you know, for new stylists who come in, one is that there is a huge confusion between whether they want to become designers or whether they want to become stylists. And, you know, they both are hugely interlinked, but very distinctive fields of profession. So that is a challenge that they've phase. One is that, you know, obviously when you venture into this field, to start getting work just on your own because the work is not as widespread becomes difficult. So they initially start, you know, either working with established stylists or interning with them. And then to sort of break away from that and start off on their own, you know, you sort of get comfortable when you're working with a bigger name, and, you know, you sort of adapt yourself and your aesthetic to them, and you develop a fear of, you know, starting off on your own. This is another challenge that I think newer stylists sort of face. And the third is that just sort of finding work. You know, you know there are plenty of avenues, but to tap into them, because there are so many players that are coming into the market, becomes difficult. Also, a lot of stylists feel that fame is more important than your body of work. And, you know, they just become a little celebrity driven and, you know, they want to end up styling celebrities without realizing that styling goes beyond just celebrity styling. You know, you have commercial styling, you have fashion styling, editorial styling, fashion shows you can style. So, you know, there are plenty of things that you can do within the purview of styling. And it's not only celebrity driven. So, you know, like maybe just their, you know, sheer want to get into celebrity styling, they forget to tap into the other avenues.
So what's the career highlight you're most proud of?
Oh, wow, it's difficult to sort of pick one, but I think it would be my first styling project was for Puma, the brand, and it was their Sweet Gully campaign, which was shot in the form of a music video, and that sort of set the tone for the Gully Boy film also, because it had Divine, it had rappers, it had graffiti artists, it had musicians, it had over 100 artists, and in fact, at the end of the year, the campaign was nominated for Cannes Lion Film Festival as well. So I think, like, just to have the first project that you do that becomes so hugely successful, not only in the country but globally, I think that gave me the confidence that, you know, I've made the right sort of professional choice.
So what do you like about styling? What inspired you? What was that moment that made you feel like I should get myself into styling?
You know, I've always, a lot of your passion comes from your growing up years. And for me, you know, like living in a house with of course my parents, my mother, and I had a sister, and all of them were very interested in fashion in their daily lives. You know, they'd make an effort to look good, make an effort, and I would always accompany them when we went shopping. So, you know, I think that keen interest in fashion developed during that phase. Even when I was working with a choreographer, you know, we'd end up doing films and award shows, and there's a lot of costuming that is involved. And I think that is, again, when I started realizing that, you know, this is something that I enjoy doing. And, you know, while we would do shows and films, and there would be stylists styling the celebrities, and, you know, they would see my interest in fashion, and then, you know, they would talk to me, and they would tell me that, you know, you do have an eye and you do have an interest in fashion, so why aren't you tapping into that? And I think it was just a matter of me taking that leap, and which, you know, I didn't shy away from. It took me some time to realize it, but I didn't shy away from it. And when I took it, you know, you get a sense of belonging, you get a sense of realization that, you know, what you are doing is what you're meant to do. And that happened soon after I got into that profession. And yeah, there's sort of been no looking back since.
So if you would, so what are the common mistakes you have seen others make in this industry?
I think I already answered this. It's very similar to the one where I spoke about the new stylists, no?
I'm sorry. So how would your 10-year-old self react to what you're doing right now?
I think content and satisfied, because you know, you've especially at the time when I was 10 years old, we were living in a society where professional choices were meant to be conventional. The only way to become successful is if you became an engineer, CA, doctor, or did an MBA was upcoming at that time. So if you did an MBA, or, you know, and got like a corporate job, globalization had happened. So, you know, working for MNCs was a huge deal. So, you know, like that was the conventional format. And I think from a very young age, I knew that I'm not cut out to follow the convention and sort of break that barrier. And, you know, I think my 10-year-old self would be very happy that I didn't feed into my fear and followed what was the regular route that is selected for and by people, but actually took that risk of doing something that I wanted to do and something that I was truly passionate about, and that I didn't stick to a comfort zone. And you know, in at regular phases in my career, have been open to taking risks and jumping from one to another.
So how do you measure whether you are successful?
I think I drive success by two mediums or meter. One is contentment, happiness, and satisfaction. You know, when you do something and it sort of creatively gives you that satisfaction and gives you mental peace, that is one. And second is that obviously, you know, like the sort of satisfaction that your family derives. That sort of settlement in them professionally, I think, you know, they realize they can, you know, sort of now do their own thing and chill and not worry so much. So I think these are the two basic benchmarks that sort of define success. For me, success has never been money driven. Yes, it is very important to do well, to lead a happy life, a satisfied life, but that is not a benchmark of success for me.
So of all the social media pages you have looked at, what's the best one and why?
It's very hard to sort of pick just one, because everyone, I think, you know, today social media is the go-to format to sort of present yourself, not only as a person, but also professionally. It's almost become like a work profile. You know, even for me, so many times when clients approach, they don't ask for a work profile, but they just ask for your Instagram link. And, you know, that's where they sort of gauge, how, you know, your work or how you are as a person as well. So I think picking one would be difficult, but there are lots, from modeling agencies to designers to celebrities to even regular people, you know, people who for food photographers, other photographers. There are just so many. I think, like, probably I would say that one interesting thing that happened was the coming of Diet Sabya as an Instagram handle, because, you know, there are... fashion is a very globally close-knit community, yet the audiences may or may not be aware of the fact that you know, the aesthetic may be borderline inspired slash copied, and you know, the audience cannot be cheated on the fact that what is original, and therefore there is a price attached to it. And, you know, you're eating into someone's creativity by making cheaper copies of the same. So for them, just calling that out and sort of adding that little bit of sense of humor to it as well makes it an interesting Instagram handle.
Okay. So what advice would you give to the young generation who want to start or create something unconventional?
Don't fear following the unconventional, which also means don't take your passion for granted. So many times you think that you're passionate about something and it will come easy to you. Following the unconventional also means, I'm going to say that line again. Following the unconventional also means that you're following the harder path, where the support that you have may not be so much unless you make it. You will be constantly monitored and constantly tested mentally, emotionally, physically. So you have to make sure that you're extremely strong to follow that path. And also be ready to take the risk. Be ready to accept the fact that money may come in late, but when it comes, it will give you a lot of satisfaction. And be prepared that this may or may not work, but if it works, it will be the happiest thing that happens to you, and that you have to constantly keep going, and you have to be constantly keep you have to constantly keep pushing yourself to reach a point of satisfaction in the field that you've sort of chosen. And you will sort of eventually you'll be happy, because you'll be pioneering the movement where people will not look at your professional as unconventional anymore, because with the success that you have professionally, maybe for the future generations, you will change the norm, and the unconventional will someday become conventional.
So if you could go back to any time in history, where would you go?
If if I'd want to go back to a time in history will probably be all the way back to the 14th, 15th century in the formative years of fashion in Paris when, you know, the fashion started taking the shape of fashion. Before, it was more like a personal choice or like a princely thing or a classist or elitist sort of a thing where different stratas of society were meant to wear certain types of clothes. And I think it's during those centuries where within each class, fashion started emerging and it started taking a shape of something that started becoming a norm of sorts. So I think just to observe and be a part of something that has sustained centuries and centuries later and taken the form of what we see today, it'll be a nice thing to sort of be present at the formative part of fashion.
So given the choice of anyone in the world, whom would you want as a dinner guest?
As a dinner guest, if I had a choice to pick someone, I think it would be Oprah Winfrey, as cliched as that would sound. But I think for me, during my growing up years, I watched a lot of her show. And I watched a lot of people who would come and talk about following the unconventional. And, you know, her sort of supporting people from different walks of life, mentally, emotionally, who were going through mental health issues. And, you know, just reaching out and making sure that they're happy. And, you know, I remember she used to have a lot of people, you know, who were into interiors, into fashion, into, you know, at that back in the day, which the professions that were totally unconventional. And I think like that sort of gave me the strength to believe that, you know, it's okay to have a different choice in profession. I think I'd sort of like to sit down with her and chat with her and tell her my story as well.
So would you like to be famous in what way?
I don't think for me fame plays a very, very important role. I think it's nice to have people who appreciate what you do and people who sort of get inspired by you. So I think if I had to be famous amongst anyone, it would probably be the youth or the younger generations who sort of watch my journey or watch my body of work and get inspired by it. I think that sort of fame for me is more important than, you know, having fans or global fame.
So if you could wake up tomorrow having gained any one quality or ability, what would it be?
Sorry, could you repeat that?
If you could wake up tomorrow having gained any one quality or ability, what would it be?
If I could gain to travel at the blink of an eyelid, like not to go through the flights and the trains and the wait to travel, just if I could like have a superpower where I could like, you know, travel anywhere just if I wanted to, that would be like one ability that I would like to, I would love if we could develop.
How do you fuel your performance?
How do I view my performance?
Yes.
I think it's in a way. Obviously, initially you seek external gratification if it's a particular project, and how appreciative the team is. The, you know, the production or the ad agency or the models or the fashion director or the designer, whoever the celebrity that you're working with, I think that is step number one in terms of viewing your performance. I think second would be when the work sort of gets published and, you know, you get an external audience that reaches out to you either through social media or through the phone or whatever, or when they meet you. And third is, you know, you personally sort of, we're humans eventually, we always compare our own work to the previous work that we've done. So I think for me, evolving and moving forward is very important. So, you know, every time I do a project, I compare it to something that I've done in the past and just see aesthetically if I've grown more and if I've, you know, sort of been in, you know, each time you sort of evaluate yourself and if you've made certain mistakes, you know, you don't want to repeat them. So, you know, I sort of evaluate in that sense to to gauge if I've been able to overcome things that I could not in my previous projects and sort of honed and nurtured further talents.
So what are your thoughts on quarantine and how are you coping with that?
Obviously, these are not pleasant times, for people who are cooped up in their homes and, you know, have a comfortable meal a couple of times a day are obviously at an advantage. But in a larger scheme of things, people who are stuck and are facing situations globally, I think these are times that we didn't hope for and these are times that we did not foresee. But the only thing is that I think it's safety first. And it's very important for people to understand that it is only us who can help sort of combat the situation. And I think everyone is waiting for normalcy to sort of set in. And there is no certain timeline to that. So, you know, while we're stuck in a situation, it's very important to make use of the time. You know, we all sort of in our professional lives run helter-skelter and don't take our time for ourselves and to center ourselves. I think this is a good opportunity for us to find that balance, to sort of have an internal dialogue and seek what really matters to us. And take time out to sort of nurture our skills. You know, there are so many online courses. There are so many opportunities that, you know, you can sort of gain knowledge which will help in practical application once things sort of open out. Connect with your inner self, connect with yourself, connect with people that you haven't found time for because of your schedule. You know, rekindle old friendships. Take time out for things that you actually love doing. So I think it's a forced way of locking us into a space and taking us back to the basics.
So if you were meeting 3 years from today, what would have happened during that time for you to feel happy about your progress?
I don't look at the future in terms of goals and in terms of objectives that I want to achieve. I think for me, I'm more in the present. And, you know, I take each day at a time and sort of, for me, a 24-hour fulfillment in reality, which I'm living, is far more stronger than a future goal. But I think the answer lies in your question itself. If you meet me 3 years from now and if you see me smiling and if I'm happy, I think that means that I've achieved the objectives that I wanted to.
Okay. Thank you, Bharat, for sharing your aspirations and goals in your journey. And it was really interesting and inspiring. And thank you for telling us about everything that you have learned in your life. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure for me to talk about something. I think this is a great platform for people to hear and get inspired and motivated to follow the unconventional. And I think the younger generation or the so-called millennials have sort of empowered themselves to take that leap. And I hope that they hear this and it motivates and inspires them to keep going at it. And whether it's conventional or whether it's unconventional, but to follow their heart and do something that makes them truly happy.